Every bit of information I know about that Jeopardy guy came from text messages from my dad.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Popular Science's Techathlon, tech news through games, trivia, and usually friendly competitions. I'm your host, Jason Letterman, and playing along with me today are Corinne, Facebook Poke Iozio.
Facebook Poke.
Stan, BBM Ping Horacek.
Yeah, I'm not going to make the noise, but you know what it sounds like.
And Rob, AIM Custom Away Message Verger.
I wish I could draw an away message on my forehead to let everybody know that that's what my brain is doing right now. It's kind of away.
First up is the Techathlon Decathlon, 10 trivia questions to catch you up on the week's tech news. I'll ask our panel all about what's been happening in the tech world since our last episode. They'll buzz in to answer and get points for each question they correctly answer. They'll also have the opportunity to steal any question that their fellow panelists answer incorrectly, as long as it isn't true or false or multiple choice. Whoever has the most points at the end of the game will win what I will call a fabulous prize from our dollar store bag. Let's get started. Question number one. Last Monday, Apple held its annual Worldwide Developers Conference, or WWDC. One of the biggest changes the company announced is the dissolution of iTunes into three separate apps on the Mac. If you get the names exactly right, you can have 1 point for each app you name. Rob.
Apple Music.
Apple Music.
Apple TV.
Apple TV.
Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts. 3 points to Rob right off the bat.
Well, see you next week, guys.
Stan and I are going home now. It's over. This is true on Mac desktop, right, Rob? But it's not necessarily true across everyone who's using iTunes.
Yeah, the confusing thing is that iTunes as a program is definitely going away on the Mac desktop, but there's also this thing called the iTunes Store where you buy stuff from. And so the iTunes Store app will continue to kind of live on your phone, and iTunes Music Store will continue to live on in Apple Music as a program on your Mac as a kind of place to buy music. And iTunes will exist in other places and other forms as a store, but the program itself for Macs is going away.
But is everything changing for Windows users too?
No, yeah, good point. Windows users, iTunes will continue to exist. It'll still be terrible, probably.
I mean, it's always, it's nice to think of it as being broken up, like maybe if it's not this giant bloated program, it won't be as terrible, I assume. But I don't know. It makes a lot of sense to be very descriptive about what each of the different apps does, especially as we move more towards services where everything is stratified. Like, this is how we do video. This is how we do podcasts. This is how we do music. But I don't know. This just seems to me like three apps that are going to accidentally be left open on my computer all the time.
I think it makes sense, though. It parallels pretty closely what Apple is already doing on mobile devices on other screens.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. And I think the problem has been that it's just been a little confusing since, you know, Apple rolled it out and then there was rumors beforehand that iTunes was going away. And so people have been feeling confused about what's happening. But it does seem like the strategy eventually makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. It's something long term that will be like, oh, yeah, it makes way more sense than having everything.
I think there are also
all shoved together.
Approximately two different kinds of people who use iTunes. There's me who plugs in my phone and iTunes opens and then I force quit it.
Yeah, as fast as possible.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
For 100% of the times I have quit iTunes, it has been by force quit. And then there's other people like one of our other editors, Chuck, who has this really elaborate system of just like high bitrate, lossless audio files. And he uses iTunes as an audio server and like he's concerned. And I think that like that's it. It's your all or nothing.
And never the
iTunes.
Twain shall meet.
Yeah.
And then like, there's the rest of us in the middle being like, can it just work and not be annoying?
Oh, yeah. I feel like that's the what most everybody is in. That's why the coverage was so funny where they were like, you know, everyone was writing these like eulogies for iTunes. Where I'm like, show me one normal person who doesn't have to write
about
iTunes.
You be nice
iTunes.
To my friend, Chuck.
Chuck is great. I think his use case is
he's like a power user.
Yeah, and I think that's totally fine. But like, and if you're a mainstream tech writer and you're writing if you're a normal person and you're reading an obituary for iTunes, you're like, that's the thing I plug my, you know what I mean?
And
like,
it pops up and it's annoying.
Yeah, it's like writing a eulogy for gas caps because wow, they sure are useful and we've had them for a long time. But like, who cares?
Question number two. A new Mac Pro was announced, and yes, it looks like a cheese grater. But Apple also announced a new Pro monitor that supports up to 6K resolution and a maximum brightness of 1600 nits, which is to say it's meant for designers, not the general public. What is the starting price for this new monitor?
I couldn't reach the thing. rampaged over there. It's $5,000 without the stand.
$5,000. Do you know how much you can get the stand for?
Yeah, it's $999.
All right.
I remember because everyone booed when they showed it on the screen.
It was like a gasp.
Yeah, people were literally like audibly like, whoa, when they showed the $1,000 price for the stand.
What happens if you buy the monitor but you don't want to buy the $1,000 stand? Do you just use a generic stand?
Yeah, you can. There's like a standard system for mounting, and they sell like a $200 adapter that mounts it, or you can just mount it to a regular stand. A lot of times when you like in an editing bay or something, you have this rack mount, which is, you know, just everything's built around you.
Gotcha.
But the stand is really cool.
It's cantilevered or something to help with the weight, I guess?
Yeah, and you can, like, move it. It's supposed to take very little effort to move it. And it also, like, you can rotate it free, like, quickly and freely, vertically. And, I mean, $1,000 is too much, but it's still looked really cool, I guess. I don't know.
It's that much for the general public, but for somebody who's a pro editor, does this make sense? Do you feel like it's a better alternative than some of the more
– The screen?
The stand or the monitor?
The stands.
Oh, the stand? I don't know. I think what they should have done is just said, hey, guess what? The monitor is $6,000. And everybody would be like, okay, yeah, sure, fair.
Yeah, as opposed to having like this upsell.
And let it come with the stand?
Yeah.
Got it.
I think that monitor at $6,000 seems totally reasonable to me.
And I mean, once you hit five.
In the context.
Yeah.
We'll get more into that in our in our next segment.
Yeah, I think that's what they should have done.
Question number three. Last month, we learned about a really scary new virus coming for old versions of Windows. Microsoft even issued a patch for Windows XP, which it hasn't supported for several years. The malware now has a name, Bluekeep, and it's causing enough concern that what American... Corinne.
The NSA.
That what American intelligence agency recently issued its own warning to users to update their old computers, the NSA, the National Security Agency.
Why does the National Salami Agency care about this?
Because they don't want things warming through their salami, clearly.
Got it.
No worms in my salami.
It's National Security Agency.
Now, this is a really gnarly bug, though.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely, it's got Windows real scared and the government scared enough that, you know, the top security agency for computers is saying, update your Windows XP.
Yeah, and this is, it's one of those really insidious types of viruses called a worm, which means it can spread from machine to machine without you actually really doing anything.
If your computer is on and just not protected.
Yep.
This is goes back to a conversation I had with someone else about iTunes is that, you know, they were like, well, why don't they just leave the old version and just leave a legacy version and let you download it? And like stuff like this is kind of why they can't do that.
Because they're going to stop supporting it, then that old version becomes a liability.
Yeah. And then the only reason they ever have to think about that again is if something catastrophic happens. And then they have to think about it really you know, quickly and urgently, like Microsoft is doing with Windows XP.
Yeah.
You know, so like if you were concerned about like, well, why don't, you know, Apple just keep iTunes around? Obviously, iTunes isn't an operating system, but this kind of thing where you let old software hang around and let people just bang on it until they find a way in, like that's a problem. So
now whenever I see NSA written, I'm going to think National Salami Agency. So thank you so much.
Question number four. On past episodes, we've discussed deepfakes, a type of AI that can allow a person to make a video with someone else's face and voice in real time. True or false? After doctored videos of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi circulated around the internet, specifically on Facebook, Congress is now looking to investigate deepfakes. Rob.
True.
True. And this makes sense, especially as congressional committees are starting to have to worry about things like their own members having false statements attributed to them and a new election coming up. They're worried about things circulating around the internet.
I certainly look forward to the questions because we've seen so, you know, as more and more often tech companies end up testifying before House and Senate subcommittees, the fundamental lack of understanding in our elected officials about how any of this stuff works. So I think a deep fake, they can understand the product of it. But the more mired in the detail that this line of questioning gets, I think it might be some entertaining stuff.
Yeah. You could just picture like a representative holding up his iPhone and being like, why aren't my apps updating?
If I'm not mistaken, I feel like I remember watching one of these 4-hour C-SPAN marathon sessions where someone actually showed the footage of Jordan Peele as Barack Obama.
Oh, that's a great.
If you haven't seen it, it's like that's like the most prominent. Well, it was the most prominent example of deepfakes. Although now the internet and TikTok specifically is full of memes with Mike Tyson deepfakes, where like they put Mike Tyson's face on other people, and some of them are like shockingly good.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of security implications for something like this that it, you know, that people I think have a right to be scared about.
Question number five. As we spend more and more time on our phones, it's no wonder that computer apps are porting features to their mobile versions. What feature did Skype recently announce for its iOS and Android apps? Stan.
You can broadcast your screen.
Screen sharing. Yeah, that's it.
Broadcast your screen.
This is a really good update for me. I think about it in the context of like the way that we work in our team at PopSci. We use Google Hangouts for most things, but we're not always at our computers when we're hopping in and out of meetings. And sometimes you do just need to show somebody the picture or the graphic that's on your screen, and the screen that you have is your phone.
It's almost like Skype might be good now.
Almost.
Yeah. I don't know. I just – in my brain, I've always had this Skype aversion, but I've used it recently for some like media appearances, you know, on, oh, joining us via Skype, you know, like – and it's been like, oh, you know what? This is kind of not bad. And now the screen sharing and like this security seems better now, you know, because Microsoft is clearly making that a priority. And I don't know. Like I feel like maybe I need to give Skype more of an actual chance than I have been.
Question number 6. A few weeks ago, our panel surprised me with an Oculus Quest VR headset, which I had a blast trying out. One feature that didn't make the cut into our episode, though, was using an internet browser on the Quest, of which there was only one until now. What popular browser announced it will soon release a VR browser for the Quest? Stan.
I'm just going to guess Chrome because I don't know, and Chrome seems like a good guess.
It's a good guess, but it's not right. Rob.
Firefox.
Firefox is it.
Woohoo.
That was the other good guess.
Yeah. If I had been first, I would have guessed Chrome. Yeah.
It was Internet Explorer.
What is the native one, Rob? It's just...
I think it's like a native browser. It's like a made by Facebook Oculus thing.
And it seems okay.
Yeah.
I guess.
It's a weird experience using a web browser in VR because it's just this giant screen in space in front of you.
Right.
Put on a screen to look at a different screen.
Yeah, it's weird.
And it also seems a little weird sometimes in the Oculus because it'll show you like your friends that are online and like other stuff that your friends are doing on Facebook, but also what you're browsing. It makes this inextricable link where you're like, what if they can see what sort of shenanigans I'm doing on this?
You can change that in privacy settings, but it's not like totally intuitive.
Right.
So that's scary.
Yeah. It's like, man, I should use the internet like an adult when I use this thing, not too adult. Because that's also bad.
Right.
Question number 7. A feud between Vox staffer Carlos Maza and conservative YouTuber Steven Crowder went viral last week after Maza claimed that Crowder had been harassing him for 2 years. True or false, YouTube ruled in favor of Maza and banned Crowder from its platform. Stan.
False.
It is false. YouTube ruled, although that Crowder's opinions may be hurtful, they do not violate the platform's policies.
This may have changed about 7 times since we recorded this because YouTube keeps changing its mind. There's a zillion cases like this, and YouTube has to just make these decisions, and there's no one who's really on the hook for them. It's all just – it's like a faceless Twitter account saying what they think. So I don't know. Like at first they were – he was fine and then they demonetized him and then they said they could have his monetization back if he stopped selling T-shirts. So
– yeah, he was selling T-shirts with this guy's name and face or just name with a homophobic slur on it.
Know. Whatever he was doing, he should stop it.
Question number 8. E3 is happening this week, which means a lot of dumb PR marketing stunts. My personal favorite and definitely Stan's is the – you're going to want to let me finish this question.
I'm stopping the question in advance. I don't care if I get a point or not. You hate it. I'm leaving.
Our personal favorite is the team up between Xbox and body spray maker Axe, or as they're known around the world, Lynx. They're making an Xbox-branded body wash, deodorant, and body spray, which will definitely smell great and not at all like my high school locker room. So name as many ingredients as you can that will be in the smell based on marketing copy for 1 point each. Stan.
Fruit. I remember that it said fruity. Didn't it say
that? You gotta be more specific than that.
Well, since I pressed it and everyone has to listen to me, this is dumb and I'm mad.
We're supposed to
vanilla.
Name ingredients in the smell.
It's vanilla.
Vanilla is not one of the listed ingredients.
Well, sorry guys, this question is over now. Next one.
Corinne?
Apple?
Apple is not there. Rob?
Strawberry?
No strawberry. It's a very green label and gel, and so they went with green things. So there's, quote, a fresh scent of pulsing green citrus featuring top notes of kefir lime and winter lemon, aromatic herbal middle notes of mint and sage, and woody bottom notes of patchouli and clear wood.
So it's gelatinous Mountain Dew.
Yes.
It's like every head shop you've ever walked into just exploded on your body.
Every men's locker room in the early 2000s, now in the form of deodorant.
No.
Gross.
No.
Question number 9 is multiple choice. Dating app Tinder made some changes to its platform last week, announcing it will let users choose up to 3 terms to describe their sexual orientation. It will take these options into account when pairing up potential daters. Previously, users could only choose if they wanted to see men, women, or both. How many total options can users choose from to identify their orientation? A3, B6, C9, or D12? Corinne.
9.
9 is correct. They are straight, gay, lesbian, bisexual, asexual, demisexual, pansexual, queer, and questioning.
And Xbox body wash.
The scores, we go into question number 10. Rob has 5 points, Stan has 4 points, and Corinne has 2 points. Stan, you could tie this and push it into overtime with the tiebreaker. Boston Dynamics is getting ready to release its first commercial robot. Yes, the robot manufacturer, which has delighted and terrified the internet with videos of its creations being poked, prodded, and pushed over, will have a product to sell before the end of the year. What is the traditionally... Rob?
If you were going to ask what the traditional name of the robot is, it's the Spot Mini, I think.
What is the traditionally canine name of its four-legged robot, Spot? Well done.
I did know that one.
Yeah.
My gamesmanship was not... Corinne was giving me space to try and tie it up.
That's the thing. Like, I knew the answer, but I said, but if Stan knows...
We could go to overtime.
But if I answer, it's all lost.
It was all for naught anyway. Rob still wins. Rob, congratulations. Well done.
Thank you.
The reigning champ continues.
It's been a pleasure winning.
Reach into the bag of goodies and tell us what you got.
Xbox body wash.
Oh, I'm going to wear this every day. It's a photo snow globe, and it's got a little kid in it and some fake snow. And, oh, it's so cute. I think we should just leave that photo that it comes with in there.
Does anyone smell pulsating lemon and lime?
And citrus?
Kefir lime.
Sandalwood.
Oh, God.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Rob. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back after this. This episode of Techathlon is brought to you by Blue. Blue makes microphones, headphones, and other professional audio gear that's great for making podcasts. In fact, it's what we use here to make Techathlon. You can learn more about them and all of their products at bluedesigns.com. Welcome back. Apple's big WWDC event last week was mostly about software like iOS 13 and the new Mac OS Catalina. But Tim Cook and his crew did bring some new hardware to the party. In fact, the new Mac Pro and the $5,000 6K monitor we talked about earlier generated a ton of headlines. But not all of them really made much sense. Stan, you have some, let's call them opinions, about how this pro-grade gear was received.
Yeah. Everyone in this room is literally already sick of hearing me talk about this, so now I get to bring all of you into the fold. So, Jason, you're a video guy and a producer as well, so you know that pro gear is just really expensive when you work in the creative world.
Yeah.
So when tech bloggers and other media freak out about the Mac Pro starting at $6,000 or a reference-grade monitor that costs $5,000, we have to chuckle a little bit. In this game, I'm going to present you with some gear that people in the creative industry use to make everything from music to movies. I'll also give you a price. You'll have to tell me whether the actual price is higher or lower than the one I provided. Jason, if you have a cash register effect over there on that podcast machine, now's the time to fire it up. Question one, Corinne, we're going to start with you. The new $5,000 pro-grade Apple monitor has a lot of impressive stats if you can navigate the complicated acronym-filled spec sheet, like exceptional color accuracy and consistent brightness. Creatives in the film industry typically use screens called reference monitors to watch footage and check edits. The Sony BVM-E171 reference monitor is just 16.5 inches in size, but it has all the qualities that editors look for. Is it more or less than $10,000?
I'm going to say that it is more than $10,000.
Yeah, it is actually $13,000 for a 16.5-inch monitor.
But it looks perfect.
Yeah, it
does.
That's
the thing.
The 24-inch version goes up to $16,500. And if you really want to go high-end, like if you're Peter Jackson sitting on a velvet couch watching dailies or whatever, you can go all the way up into $40,000 and beyond. Have you ever got to like look at one of these monitors,
no,
Jason?
Not in real life.
It's sort of weird because they're almost flat. Like if you're used to a TV that's like really punchy and, you know, made to make you say, wow. Like
kind of pop.
Yeah. You look at it and you're like, well, it looks kind of flat. But that's like it's supposed to be true to what you shot. All right. Jason, number two. Studio photographers, like those who shoot beautiful pictures on the pages of popular science, often use mega high resolution cameras like the Phase 1 IQ4. It has a total resolution of 150 megapixels and a sensor that's several times larger than even pro DSLRs. Will this camera set you back more or less than $50,000?
More.
Just more. It's $52,000 if you want to buy the whole camera system, which is quite a bit of money.
That is a lot of money.
Yeah. Does that include the lens?
Yeah, that's if you want to get a lens. You can just buy the Pro cameras like this, they come in pieces and you have to buy like the part with the sensor and the camera and the lens separately. But if you want to buy a whole one that works, you're going to be in for the price of a nice Honda or like an SUV.
Most of a year at a private university.
Yeah.
Do people, when they buy camera equipment like that, do you insure it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, you have to because it costs more than your car. Yeah, it costs more than my car, that's for sure. All right, Rob, question number three. We use Blue microphones here in the studio to sound silky smooth on the podcast, but choosing a microphone to record music with is a whole different animal. A company called Telefunken makes some of the best mics around, and the ELA M251T tube mic is a pro choice. You buy the mics in pairs, and they're tested and matched to each other, so when you make a studio recording, it sounds perfectly even. Does a pair of them cost more or less than $25,000?
I am going to guess less.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, a pair of these microphones will cost you $19,990.
Man.
But you do get a nice wooden box in which to store them. Question number four. Nothing in the movie industry is cheap, but there are some things you absolutely can't skimp on, and a tripod is one of them. The Miller Skyline 90 HD tripod can hold up to 165 pounds of camera gear, which is good if you're trying to use movie or broadcast-grade equipment. It uses a rotating fluid head so it can pan smoothly across a scene.
Ooh.
Is it more or less than $25,000?
The tripod. So it's not a steady cam rig. It's just a tripod.
It is a tripod. You sit the camera on it, and okay, you can use the fluid head to go back and forth, but you cannot.
I don't know. I think this is a really expensive thing. I'm going to say more.
It is actually less. Oh. It is $22,095.
Oh, they're not by that much. It's a rounding error.
But yeah, on a line item, it really
statistically
is.
Statistically.
Yeah. Because that's the funny part about this is that like there's no real electronics in it. There's nothing electronic in it. It's aluminum. It's not even carbon fiber like some of the fancy.
But it has to be infallible.
Yeah. It has to be perfect. So it's $22,000. And a company will buy that and be like, yeah, of course we have to buy that.
Fun fact about tripods is that cameramen refer to them as their sticks. Maybe you knew this already, but they're like, oh, I'm going to go put my sticks down over there.
That's a good one. All right. Jason, number five. Even software can get expensive when you're trying to do high-end creative work. Big studios like Pixar have their own software for making 3D animations, but video game makers, TV commercial studios, and architects sometimes use off-the-shelf programs. A piece of software called 3DS Max is one of the most common ones. Does the software cost more or less than $1,200 per year per user to use?
More.
It is more. It's $1,500 per year if you want to subscribe for one license.
I like the decisiveness with which you answered.
You know, sometimes you feel it in your gut.
Yeah, it was right. It was from the middle.
Yeah, it was definitely more than $100 a month for a one-year subscription.
Yeah, and you can subscribe for $4,500 if you want to commit for 3 years and really just make some 3D stuff. That's not even hardware. You don't even have anything. And it's once you're done paying for it, you don't even own it. That's just your ability to use this software.
Well, that's the model for everything these days
really
now.
Is.
You don't own anything.
Yeah. Okay, Rob, if you get this one right, you are tied with Jason.
Excellent.
And then we go to the wonderful tiebreaker. Question number six. Broadcast TV cameras use an impressive amount of glass, some of which is hand ground. Canon's UHD DigiSuper 4K compatible broadcast lens is more than 2 feet long and weighs just shy of 60 pounds. It has an 86 times zoom that the operator navigates with electronic controls that are on the lens itself. Is this monster more or less than $150,000?
Oh, wow. You wrote a great story about these cameras.
A long time ago. Yeah,
and how they're used in the Olympics. And I remember that the headline or some fact in the story was that they cost $100,000 or more. I think that they cost less than $150,000.
This one is actually more.
No!
It's $229,000. The tiebreaker fact was actually going to be really good because it's the most amount of RAM that you can have in the new Mac Pro. Anyone want to guess?
Oh, a terabyte?
1.5 terabytes.
Damn.
Which is just so much. You know how much the most RAM you can get in a MacBook Pro that you can go to the Apple Store and buy?
It's like 256 or 512,
no,
isn't it?
No, it's 32.
Wow.
32 gigs versus 1.5 terabytes. So this is a different species of machine for a different species of person.
Thanks, Stan. Let's move on to our final game of the episode. Plenty of instant messaging services have had their rise and fall, and the latest among them is BlackBerry Messenger. Yes, the consumer version of BBM, as it was known, is now gone, although you can sign up for the paid enterprise version, but if you didn't use the free version, why would you start paying for it now? One fun thing about all of these services, though, is that they made fun noises that are burned into our brains forever. I'm going to play a game now with our panel where I play a bunch of sounds and see if they can name the app to which the audio file belongs. Some of these services are long dead and some are still in use today. The panel will buzz in to answer, and whoever is the most correct at the end will be the winner. The losers will have to tweet an embarrassing away message from @TechathlonShow on Twitter, so make sure you're following us there to see it.
Stoked.
Let's do it.
All right. Here
Sounds
we go.
Good.
Number one. You want to hear it again?
Yeah. Yes.
Rob.
WhatsApp?
That is WhatsApp.
All right. What's up now? What's up, friends?
Just thinking now about all the apps that have sound effects on my phone that I've never heard because my phone never
because
makes
my
sounds.
Phone is permanently on vibrate.
Yes.
Number two. Corinne.
That was AOL Instant Messenger.
It was not AOL no? Instant Messenger.
Oh, man.
Anyone else want to take a guess? You want to hear it again?
Yeah, play it again.
Rob.
Is it Skype?
Not Skype.
No.
I thought I was going to be great at this game.
Yeah.
I am terrible. Like all these sounds like elicit this profound sense of dread in me, but I can't pinpoint why. I'm MSN Messenger.
No, that one was actually BBM.
Oh.
That was the message received noise on BBM.
Huh. Okay.
I never used Blackberries.
Number three. Rob.
iMessage.
Yeah, that's the iPhone noise.
There's also a version that sounds very much like that for the iPhone or for the Facebook Messenger. It's like I'm always confused. I changed to change one because they were too similar.
Do these sounds make other people salivate? Like, ooh, I just got a message.
Yeah.
Or they're just like, what? What?
Number four. Rob.
Skype.
It's not Skype.
No.
Stab.
Is that the Facebook
That's
Messenger
That's the Facebook
one?
Noise. Okay. I was like, oh no, it's next too.
Whooping. Sorry, I can't make that sound.
Yeah, it's the bloop that really makes the difference. Here's the iPhone noise. And here's the Facebook noise.
Ah. Okay.
It's that like, you know, you put your finger in the side of your mouth. You go, yeah.
Yeah.
I did it.
That's the Facebook chat window opening.
Gotcha.
It's the bloop. Number five. Rob.
Skype.
That's Skype.
Stop guessing Skype until it's right.
Third time's a charm on Skype.
Number six. Stan.
It's the GChat one.
Right? It is the GChat. No, nice. It's Google Hangouts.
I know that because it always happens as soon as I call into a conference call. Someone will start sending me messages. And I won't have my headphones plugged in and I'll have to quickly turn off notifications every time.
Number seven. Corinne.
That's Instant Messenger.
That's AIM.
Yeah.
Wow. Man, that one's a
Remember
real
AIM?
Trip yeah. down that plate again.
Yeah, we don't want any to hear it. Ah.
Man.
Youth.
Yeah. College.
Oh, my God. College. Middle school.
Shut up. Everyone hates you.
Number 8. Stan.
That's MSN, right?
That's MSN.
Because they used to have the, like, the marimba sounds. It was always so, like, island jaunty marimba.
All right. We are tied right now. Stan and Rob both have 3. Corinne has...
One.
I do have a tiebreaker, though, so don't feel bad. If you know it, you should buzz in.
Okay.
Okay. Number 9. Stan.
It's Yahoo, right?
It's
no?
Not Yahoo.
Oh, God. It's...
You want me to play it again?
Yeah. God, I know this.
I've definitely heard it.
Yeah.
I can't place it.
What is that stupid whistle?
I also heard it.
Why is this game so much harder than I expected it to be?
Oh, God. And I just remember, the app that made this whistle and just getting so mad at it. Like, don't you talk to me like that. Oh, it's... Stop.
It's a bird.
It's
the bird app.
Oh, geez. It's,
Bird Internet.
I gotta call it. Rob, you're so close. It's Twitter.
No, I was about to say that.
It is Bird Internet.
It literally is Bird Internet. All right, guys, here is your tiebreaker question. We all remember the heyday of BBM, but as of April 2016, the only country in the world where BBM was the most popular instant messaging app was Indonesia. As of April 2016, what percent of Android phones was BBM installed on?
In Indonesia or?
In Indonesia. Whoever is closest will be our winner.
I'm going to guess 66.
I was going to say 51.
Stan is going to pull this one out. The answer is 87.5% of Android phones in Indonesia.
Wow.
Wow.
I've never failed upward so hard in a game as I did with that one. That was pretty. I'm both proud and very, very embarrassed.
Let us know how you did. Tweet us at Techathlon Show. That's also where you can go to see Corinne and Rob's custom AIM away messages that they will tweet from the account later this week.
I have to go back into the archives, I guess.
Find something real good with a lot of different, like, tildes and asterisks.
You guys can feel better in knowing that literally all of my tweets are embarrassing, so embarrassing tweets is not a bad punishment.
Thank you so much for listening. Have a great week, listeners. We'll catch you back here next Monday. Techathlon is a popular science podcast. We're available on all major podcast platforms, so subscribe wherever you're listening now. And if you like what you hear, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It will help other people to find the show. You can buy our merch, including t-shirts, tote bags, and mugs at popsci.threadless.com. The show is produced by the entire PopSci tech team and me, Jason Letterman. Our theme music is by Billy Cadden. If you have questions, suggestions, or opinions to share, tweet us at Techathlon Show. Thanks for listening.